Recording.
Now we're holding on page 6 in Megillah Oisei. The Gemara discusses the whole matter of when, which places you read Megillah on the four, and celebrate Purim on the 14th and which the 15th. The Gemara mentions earlier, before this point, before this part over here, that Chizkiah, who lived in the city of Tveria, would read the Megillah there on the 14th and the 15th, Misafik. And the Gemara asks why. Tveria is definitely a city walled from the time of Yeshua ben Nun, and it identifies it. The Gemara brings in that connection, a pasuk from Yeshua that lists the cities of Eretz Yisrael, and it mentions a city which the Gemara identifies as Tveria, which now we're going to discuss which city that is. Anyway, the Gemara ends up answering that Tveria has on one side, doesn't really have a wall. It has the Kinneret, so the lake over there is there's the is acts as a wall on one side. When it comes to the dinim of Bate Orichoyma, that doesn't count as a walled city. Chizkiah wasn't sure whether, as far as the dinim of Purim, it does, which is why he kept the 2 days there himself. So now the Gemara goes into a discussion of that pasuk and related pesukim that talk about cities in Eretz Yisrael. Amar Rav Yochanan, Nehuna ki havei Natalia. I remember when I was a boy, Amrina Milta, I said a certain matter. I said an explanation of a pasuk, one of those pesukim in Yoshua, or She'el Nava Savaya, and I asked the elder Talmid Chachamim of my time, Ve'ishtakach Milsa Kavasi, and it turned out to be exactly as I say. Namely, you have the pesukim of, so again, the pesukim in Yoshua, they go through the territories of each one of the Shvatim, and for each one of them, they list the for some of them, they list the exact boundary points. For others, they just list a list of cities, but the Gemara elsewhere explains that it's listing the cities that are on the border. So each time you have a list of cities in a Shevet's territory, it means these are the cities along the border of their territory. So now one of those pesukim over there mentions a group of cities over there, including Hamas, Rakas, and Kinneres. So Rabbi Yochanan identifies Hamas zu Tveria, what's called in Yeshua Hamas, in his times was called Tveria. V'lomen nikra shma Hamas, why does the pasuk call it Hamas? Al shem chamit, al shum chamit Tveria, because of the hot springs of Tveria over there, so therefore the city was called Hamas. Rakas Zutzipodi, then Rabbi Yochanan continues, the city Rakas mentioned over there in the pasuk is in Rabbi Yochanan's times, it's known as Tzipodi. V'lomen nikra shmot Rakas, why in the pasuk? Because it's called Rakas, mishum de medalia kiraksa denara, because Tzipodi is high up in elevation. Tzipodi was on top of a mountain, so it's raised up like Raksa, which means the bank of a river, which is high up, which is higher compared to the river itself, to the riverbed, the same way Tzipodi is higher than the surrounding lands. In fact, for example, the Gemara mentions in Ksuvos, we learned in Rosh Hashanah about the 10 places where the Sanhedrin went into Golus, where at one point it was in Tzipodi and then in Tveria. So we discussed over there because Rebbe, for a period of time, lived in Tzipodi because since it's on top of a mountain, the air was better for him, was better for his health. So he ended up living there for 17 years. So here also, Rabbi Yochanan is saying the same thing, therefore, in the Pasuk, it's called Rats. Next, Kinneres zu Ginoisar. The third one is Kinneres, refers to the place that in Rabbi Yochanan's time is called Ginoisar. V'lomen nikra shma Kinneres. Why is the pasuk called Kinneres? Demsiki pera kakola de kinri, because the fruit from there is as sweet as the sound of a kinnar, a harp or a violin or some such stringed instrument that has a very beautiful tone, and the fruit over there is as delicious as that. Marshav mentions that the Oruch gives a different explanation. He says that's one possibility, but the other possibility is that a kinra can also mean a certain kind of tree that gives very, very delicious fruit. And according to that, then the place is called Kinneres after the fruit of that tree, which is particularly delectable. The whole Yam Kinneres is named for it. Okay. However, Omar Rava, but Rava says, so you're telling me these identifications, but me ikalamanda Omar Rakas lav Tveria he. How could anybody possibly think that Rakas is not another name for Tveria? We find, Rava says, when a great person, when a Talmid Chacham passes away in Babel, so there in Eretz Yisrael, they make a hesped for him and they say as follows. Godel hu b'sheshach. This person was or is great in Sheshach, which is a nickname for Bavel. You take the letters of Bavel and you turn them in with Atbash, they become Shin Shin Chof. We find that actually already in Psukim in Yirmiyah. There are a couple of Nevuos of Yirmiyah where he refers to Bavel under that name Sheshach. We have in one of the in one of the uh, in one of the slichos that we say on Shavuos Batam, was also we have the line v'gam sheshach k'makadutz nafani, that also sheshach surrounded and encompassed us like a bowl. So we see that Sheshach is a nickname for Babel. So he was great in Sheshach, the Shemloi Barakas, but he has a name, he has a reputation in Rakas. Now Tveria in Rava's times and for some period before that was the place where the great yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael was. We learned over there in Rosh Hashanah that the last place that the Sanhedrin was located was in Tveria, and that means the whole great Beis Medrash of Eretz Yisrael was located over there. So they would say here we're talking about a Talmid Chacham. He lived his whole life in Babel, but we know of him and he has a reputation and fame here in Rakas in Tveria that we learn his Torah and we discuss his Torah in our Beis Medrash. So we see clearly from that Rakas is Tveria. Furthermore, Rava continues, "V'chimaskar roina lahasam." Suppose that you have a person who passed away in Bavel, again, a Talmid Chacham who passed away in Bavel, and this time they actually bring his body to be buried in Eretz Yisrael. So when they bring up the Aron, "Sapdi lehochi," then they make the hesped in Tveria as follows. "Oy have a sridim." You who love the sridim, sridim literally means the remnants. Rashi says it refers to the Jewish people. The Aruch says that actually, specifically, it means more the Talmid Chachamim. And we find in a couple of places where the Gemara mentions that the word Sarid is a reference to Talmid Chachamim. Anyway, you who love the Sridim, the Jewish people in general, or the Talmid Chachamim particularly, Yoshvei Rakas, you who live in Rakas, Su'u v'kablu harugei oimet, go out and receive and welcome those who were killed in the depths. Bavel is a very low-lying land as opposed to Eretz Yisrael. It's mostly mountainous, so therefore Bavel, even in Pesukim already, Bavel is often referred to as a deep place, as a depth, and therefore here also in this poetic statement that they would say they would refer to Bavel as Oimek, the deep place. So you have already two examples where we see that Rakas definitely means Tveria, because that was where the center of Jewish life in Eretz Yisrael was at that time. So it's clear that Rakas is Tveria, not like Rabbi Yochanan was saying that Rakas is Tzipori. And here's a third example: Kinoch Nafshe de Rab Zera. When Rab Zera passed away, now Rab Zera began his life in Babel. He was born and grew up in Babel and became a great Talmid Chacham over there. Then he moved to Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara mentions in a few places various stories connected with that. Famously, you have, for example, that he fasted many fasts in order to forget the style of learning of Babel, so he'd be able to learn in the style that they do in Eretz Yisrael, etc. We have many stories in connection with him going to Eretz Yisrael. Anyway, so he lived out the rest of his life in Eretz Yisrael as one of the distinguished Chachamim over there. So when he passed away, a certain professional masvid they would have by Levias, they would have professionals over there who would come and give speeches or poetry to be ma'orah people's emoto, to arouse people's emotions, to cry about the nifter. So his poem went as follows: Eretz Shinar Horav Yolda, the land of Shinar, which is Bavel, conceived and gave birth. Eretz Tzvi Gidla Shashueha, the beautiful land of Eretz Yisrael. Tzvi can mean beautiful or can be desirable. Gidla Shashueha raised her precious plaything, meaning, in other words, here you have somebody who was born and became great in Babel, and he's like the darling, Shashueha is like the darling child of Babel, and now Eretz Yisrael got to raise him the rest of his life because he moved to Eretz Yisrael. Oy na lo, omra Rakas, now Rakas should say, woe to her, ki avda klei chamdasa, because her precious vessel is now lost. So we see again that Rakas is Tveria, because that's where Reb Zera lived and that's where he learned. So you have three examples where we see that Rakas is Tveria. Marsha points out the reason why the Gemara is bringing three different cases is because there are three possibilities. You can have a person who lived his life in Bavel and was buried over there. So then in Eretz Yisrael, they make one kind of hesped on him. He didn't have the schus to come with his goof to Eretz Yisrael, but he has a shame tov, he has a reputation that preceded him, and in Eretz Yisrael they learn his Torah. Then you have the second one where he didn't have the schus to come in his lifetime to Eretz Yisrael, but they were able to bring him there after he passed away. So then we have Haruge Oimek, we call him the ones who were killed in the depths, meaning, so to speak, you could say like he did something wrong by not coming to Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara mentions at the end of Ksubas the various things about that a person really ought to go to Eretz Yisrael, and it's considered to a certain extent a chet if he doesn't. So therefore they call him Haruge Oimek. And then the third example is where you have a person like Reb Zeder, who actually moved to Eretz Yisrael and continued to learn Torah over there. So you can't say he's not lost. Of course, his neshama is where it is, in Gan Eden, in the highest levels of Gan Eden. But the people who are left, Klal Yisrael, can weep and mourn over the fact that they lost their kli chemda, that they lost their precious vessel, that now they no longer have the tzaddik to accomplish good things, to accomplish good things for them. Anyway, from all these three examples, we see that Rakas is Tveria. Ela, Omer Rabba, or on the bottom of here, it says it's really supposed to be Rava. Chamos, no, rather we have to re-identify those cities in Yeshua, and the identifications are as follows. Chamas, Zuchame Gror, Geder, really, it's supposed to be. The city Chamas in Yeshua refers to what in later times is called Chame Gror, Chame Geder. It's also hot springs, but they're not actually in Tveria. They're a distance away from it. They're also near the Kinneret. They're in that general area, but they're not in the city of Tveria proper. To this very day, you can go over there and you have the hot springs and Chamat together. It's a nice area over there, and a whole resort and spa over there. Rakas zu Tveria, then Rakas of the Pasuk is Tveria, as we have these various proofs that we brought. Kineres zu Ginoisar, and Kineres, yeah, is Ginoisar, like Rabbi Yochanan said. Now, so Rabbi Yochanan before had said, the Ishtakach Milsa Kavosi, it came out the way I said, but here we just said that Rava has comprehensively slogged him up and saying that no, Rakas is not Sipori, as Rabbi Yochanan had said, but rather Rakas is Tveria. So what's going on? How was Rabbi Yochanan, how could Rabbi Yochanan say it was found as I said? So there are various achronim that discuss the point. We find as far as Tveria itself, it comes out there was a new Tveria and an old Tveria. We find in some places that's brought that Tveria is very close to Tzipori, whereas the modern city of Tveria and even the main city of Tveria as it existed in the time of the Amoraim is quite a few miles away from Tzipori. So it seems that there was an old city and then there was a new city built where the city extended in a different direction. Also, you have, for that matter, in Tveria itself, you have the hot springs, and in Chamat Geder, you also have the hot springs, and it seems that over time, the city of Tveria grew and started extending in other directions. So therefore, Rabbi Yochanan can correctly say that Chamos means Tveria, because the original city of Tveria was more in the area of those hot springs. And then he can say Rakas refers to Tzipori, but as the various cities grew and started merging together and coming closer together, then you wind up that Rakas includes part of the area of New Tveria, which is where the Chachamim lived. And therefore, Rava can say that you have all these proofs where we see that Rakas is used to refer to Tveria. So the Loman Nikoshmo Rakas. So why does the Pasuk call it Rakas? Shafilu Rekonin Shabam Malayim Mitzvahs Karibin. Even the empty people in Tveria are as full of mitzvahs as a pomegranate. Now we say that generally about the Jewish people. So here we're saying specifically it applies to the people of Tveria. An interesting explanation about that Ben Yehoyada points out is you have a machlokas Reb Meir and Reb Yehuda in Kiddushin, where when it says Boni Matam LaHashem Alekeichem, does that apply always, or does that apply only when Oisin Ritzonu Shamakim? Reb Yehuda holds only when we're doing Ritzonu Shamakim, then we're called Bonim, and when not, then not. Whereas Reb Meir says, regardless, you were always Bonim LaMakim. So now, Tveria is where Reb Meir lived and where he's buried. Ad HaYemazeh, you have the caver of Reb Meir Bala Nes is one of the major sites in Tveria. So therefore, so when it comes to judging the people of Tveria more than any place else, the other places Hashem might hold like Rabbi Yehuda and maybe not consider and maybe not judge the people so favorably. But in Tveria, because of the schus of Rabbi Meir, then the people there are judged more favorably, and therefore we say that even they are Malay Mitzvah Skirin. Marsha points out, okay, you have the Rakas refers to the word Rekonim, whereas the Malay Mitzvah Skirin. And the answer is because where do we learn b'chlal the concept of that even the empty Jews are Malay mitzvahs kerim? And we learn it from the pasuk that it says in Shir HaShirim, kefelach harimun rakosech, your rakas, your temple, literally it means your temples, like on your head, are like a slice of pomegranate, your temples, your cheeks, or whatever. And from that we doubt that it means that even the rekonin are Malay mitzvahs kerim. So therefore, they could call the place Rakas, the Posit calls it Rakas, and it's meant to evoke that association in our mind of Rakas with Rekosech, and then you realize the rest of the association that it means Malay Mitzvah Skirim. Rava Amar on the bottom here, it says it should really be Rabba, Rakas Shema. Sorry, I skipped one. Rabbi Yirmi Amar Rakas Shema. Rabbi Yirmi says another possibility. The real name of the place is Rakas. Balama Nikra Shema Tveria. Why is it called Tveria? She Yeshevis Betabura Shal Eretz Yisrael. Because it's located in the navel, meaning in the middle of Eretz Yisrael. Now, Marsha points out, Yerushalayim, and particularly the site of the Beis Mikdash, is the middle of the world. But within Eretz Yisrael itself, we can say that Tveria is the middle. Now, it's a little hard to see because Tveria is all the way up in the north, but you have to remember the borders of Eretz Yisrael, as it describes them in the Pesukim in Parshas Maaseh, are much larger than the present day state of Israel, or even than the places that the Oile Bavel resettled. It went included a good part of what's nowadays Lebanon and Syria, and relative to all of that, yeah, Tveria might well be said to be in the middle of it. By the way, there is a medrash that gives a different. Here, the Gemara is giving reasons for the name Tveria based on Lashon Kodesh, related to the word Tabor or other reasons that it's going to say. Now, there is actually a medrash which says that you have an example where the Goyim think that their fame is always going to outlive them, based on a pasuk in Tilim, Kirba Matem Al Olam, in today's Tilim, where, for example, they go and name cities after themselves. So you have the medrash gives examples. Tveria is named for the Roman Emperor Tiberius. Alexandria is named for Alexander the Great, and you have other examples like that. So they think that they're going to perpetuate themselves for all time by naming a city after them. So the Chachamim were well aware that the name Tveria comes from the name of a Roman emperor, but the Gemara here is darshining it as if it was a word in Lashon Kodesh. First of all, the Gemara often does that with names and words from foreign languages. The Gemara may also mean, Taka, why did Jews start using that name? Why don't they continue using the name Rakas from the Pasuk? So here the Gemara is doubtioning as though the name was given that for a reason based on Lashon Kodesh. So Rabbi Yirmiyah is saying that Shia Shevis B'Tabura Shal Eretz Yisrael, it's located in the navel in the center of Eretz Yisrael. Rava Amar, Rabba, it says it's supposed to be, says Rakas Shema. The real name of the place is Rakas. V'lama Nikra Shema Tveria. Why is it called Tveria? Shatova Re'iyasa. Because its sites are good. Tosfos explains that means there were a lot of gardens and orchards over there. Marshall says another point as well is it was good. The site there was good in the sense that you had all the Chachamim over there. The Sanhedrin was there, as we learned that was the last location of the Sanhedrin. So therefore, it can be called Tova Re'iyasa. It's good to see what's over there because you get to see all the Chachamim sitting and learning and teaching Torah. As far as the Malay Mitzvahs Karimin, by the way, Ben Yehoyada makes a point. He says it also means, since we learned in Rosh Hashanah that Tveria is the last place where the Sanhedrin was located, and then Limos HaMashiach, it's going to be reestablished there, and then they're going to move back to Yerushalayim. So therefore, so we have it means that the Jews who are there at that time, particularly, then we can say on them, Malay Mitzvahs Kerimen, these Jews who are there, the last place where the Sanhedrin was, and those Jews who are going to be the Jews of Ikvas and Mashiach are Malay Mitzvahs Kerimen. Here's another one. So we've gone through that pasuk in Yeshua, and we've identified the places. So now the Gemara continues, Omer Ze'iri, Kitron Zutzipodi. Now you have another city that's mentioned in Yoshua and in Shoftim named Kitron. It's located in the territory of Zvul. So it's called, in our times, it's called Tzipodi. So here he's arguing with before Rabbi Yochanan had said that Rakas is Tzipodi, and Rava had slugged that up and said that Rakas is Tveria. So now Ze'iri is telling us Tzipodi is named in the Psukim over there, but it's called by a different name there. It's called Kitron. V'lom nikra shmot Tzipodi. So why in our times it's called Tzipodi? Omra papa she yeshevis berosha har katzipor, because it's located on top of the mountain, so it's like a bird perched high up in a tree. The Gemara asks for Kitron Tzipodi. You're telling me that Kitron is identical with Tzipodi. Well, Kitron b'chelkei shel Zvulun haya. The problem with that is we find that Kitron is located in the territory of Zvulun, and we know that d'chtiv, because the Pesukim describe at the beginning of Sefer Shoftim, it starts by describing how after Yeshua passed away, the various Shevatim are going and continuing the conquest of their respective parts of Eretz Yisrael. But the pasuk goes on to mention that most of the Shevatim did not take care to eradicate all the Knanim from their midst, different Shvatim left enclaves of Knanim in their area, and they made them pay taxes and whatnot, but still they ended up learning from their bad ways, and eventually those Knanim became a thorn in their side, as the Pasuk can say, as the Psukim, as Hashem warns, in fact, in Parashas Maaseh, that that's exactly what's going to happen. Anyway, so one it mentions over there is Zvulun, Lohodesh as Yoshve Kitron, Ves Yoshve Nahalo, that Zvulun did not dispossess, did not kick out the people of Kitron, the Goyim, who lived in Kitron and in Nahalo. So we see, obviously, if the Pasuk is saying that Zvulun didn't do it, means he should have been his job to do, so we see that Kitron is one of his cities. Now, Uzvulun Misraim Amidos of Hava. Now we find that Zvulun was complaining about the midah, about the mazel that was given to him in Hashemayim, that he was the type of territory that he was given in Eretz Yisrael, where that Shevet didn't like that. And as the Gemara is going to go establish, the part that includes the area of Tzipori is actually a very good part of Eretz Yisrael, and if that was part of Zvulun's territory, then why would he be complaining? But first we're going to work out the whole thing, what he was complaining about, and then we'll get back to that point. So, Dichtiv, the Pasuk says, in Devorah's Shira, she describes Zvulun am cheref nafshe lomus. Zvulun was a people, was a nation who scorned their life, who scorned themselves to death. Now, the simple meaning of the Pasuk is that they're so brave, they're willing to put their life on the line to go and fight against Sisera. We find Devorah and told Barak to gather together 10,000 volunteers from Shevet Zvulun and Shevet Naphtali, and so now Devorah is praising them that they did that and they risked their lives to go and fight on behalf of the rest of the Jewish people. So in the simple meaning, that's what it means. But now the Gemara is doubting it differently. The whole Pasuk goes, Zvulun am cheref nafshe lomus, which literally means that Zvulun scorned his life to death, meaning, in other words, he's willing to risk his life and he's not worried about his own safety. But Naphtali am l'roimei sodeh, and Naphtali is on the heights of the fields. So the simple meaning is it means that both Zvulun and Naphtali were brave and they went to war and fought. But now the Gemara is understanding it differently. Zvulun am cheref nafshe lomos, that Zvulun is scorning their life and is saying we'd prefer to die because matam, why? Mishum the Naphtali amiroim isade. Because Naphtali is on the heights of the field, meaning that Naphtali has very good quality land, whereas Zvulun complains that their area is not so good. Why is it mentioned in Shiras Dvora? Marsha says, because up until that point, where would Zvulun have found out? They don't necessarily have occasion to travel to Naphtali's territory very often. But now, in the war against Sisera, where Naphtali and Zvulun are gathering together in the city of Kedesh Naphtali, which is in the city of Kedesh, which is in the territory of Naphtali, so for the first time, large numbers of people from Zvulun discover, hey, this is a land that's a much different quality than what we have, and therefore they start complaining. So Omav Zvulun Lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so the Shevet says to Hashem, or maybe even it means Zvulun himself, their ancestor, says in Gan Eden, whatever, says to Hashem, Ribbono Shel Olam, La'achai Nasata Lahem Arotzes, you gave my brothers, such as Naphtali, you gave them actual lands. V'lina Sata Yamim Unaharis, me, you gave an area that has a lot of lakes and seas and rivers and things like that, because Zvulun's territory is basically along the shore. As Yaakov says in his bracha, as Zvulun l'choif yamim yishka, and he'll live by the seashores, behu l'choif anias, and he'll be a haven and a port for ships. The achos al tzidon, and his end will go all the way to tzidon. So Zvulun's territory is basically along the coast. So you gave my brothers, you gave them good fertile land, and me, you gave mostly water. La'achai nasakalem sodasikramim, my brothers, such as Naphtali, you gave fields and vineyards. Belina sata horim ugros, me, you gave areas of mountains and hills. So I'm complaining. I didn't get a very good part of Eretz Yisrael. Amalei, so Hashem answers back to Shevet Zvulun, don't you worry, you have an advantage. Kulan srichim l'chai dechilozin. All of them are going to depend on you for the chilazin, because the chilazin is found along the coast of the Mediterranean, which is in your territory, and they need the chilazin for tchelas, for tzitzis. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, amim how you crow over gomer. The pasuk says in Zvulun's bracha, then in Moshe Rabbeinu's bracha to Zvulun. So he says that amim how you crow, the people will call at the mountain. Now there are a few different explanations of what that means. It actually on the pasuk explains that the mountain means Haramiria, means the Beis Mikdash. But another way of looking at it is it means that the people are all going to come to your mountain, Zvulun, because the pasuk continues, and the pasuk ends off with spune tmune choil. You'll have the spune of the hidden of the sand. But Tony Rav Yosef, and Rav Yosef explains that these refer to three different natural resources which are found in Zvolun's territory and not anywhere else. Sfune ze chilozin. The word sfune refers to the chilozin, because the word safun means the word safun, Rashi explains, means choshu. We find in the Lashon of Brisis, we find the word safun means important. So the chilozin is very, very valuable because of the tchelas dye that you get from it. Ari Kaplan mentions in his commentary, The Living Torah, he says that somebody once estimated that you need about 8,000 chilozins just to produce one cubic centimeter, one tiny little vial of tchelas. So therefore, it's very expensive stuff. So sfune refers to that. Tmune zutris. The word tmune, which means hidden, refers to tris, which is tuna fish. So there's going to be plenty of that in your territory, Zvolun, and everybody's going to come to you to buy that. Choil, and when it says the sand, doesn't just mean any kind of sand. Zuschuchis levana, it means the kind of sand from which you can make white, which is to say clear glass. Back in those times, it was a very, very rare thing to have sand of the quality that you can make clear glass from. In fact, the Gemara elsewhere says that after the Churban, clear glass disappeared, or Tosfos says almost disappeared, because the ability to find such good clean sand for the purpose was no longer available. So now, though, you, Zvolun, are going to have that kind of sand in your territory, and therefore everybody's going to depend on you for that. Marsha points out that actually you have that on the Pasuk there in Chumash, Rashi mentions that these resources are found in the territory of Yisachar and of Zvolun. But here we're saying that only Zvolun was complaining. Yisachar were busy learning Torah, so they didn't care what kind of territory they had in Eretz Yisrael. But Zvolun, who are mainly supporting Yisachar, they're the ones who are complaining. Anyway, so Hashem says, you have all those beautiful natural resources in your area. What are you complaining about? Amar the fun of, but Zvolun still isn't satisfied. He says, Rabbeinu Shlomo, mi moedi eni al zos? Who's going to inform me? Meaning, in other words, so Rashi says it means people may take the chilozin or the sand or whatever without paying me. And then what? Then I don't have any advantage. Marsha says, you're going to say that is Zvolun going to accuse people of stealing? No, mi modieni. What if, for example, as far as the tchelas, people may try to make counterfeits of it? You have, for example, kola ilan, you have indigo, which is the same color as tchelas and can often substitute for it as a dye, but you can't use that for tzitzis. You're not allowed to use that for tzitzis. So who's going to inform me? Who says that people are going to come buy the genuine chelas and dye from me? Maybe they'll just use inferior counterfeit substitutes. Amalai, so Hashem answers him with the next pasuk in Moshe's bracha. Shom yizbuchu. Actually, it's not the same next pasuk. Earlier in that same pasuk, Kisham yizbuchu zivchet tzedek. The pasuk says so that means simen ze yialoch. Hashem tells him you'll have this simen, just like zivchet tzedek means korbanos of righteousness. You can't bring korbanos from stolen money or stolen goods. The same way, shekhan notum amchab loydamim, anybody who tries to take these things from you without payment or to use substitutes that they shouldn't be using or whatever, einem loyo b'prakmatya shaloy plum, his business won't do any good. When it comes to the chilozen, the dye, Hashem is going to make sure the dye gets ruined, so they're not going to have a good batch of dye. When it comes to the sand, they won't have a good batch of glass, etc. So the same way, as korbanos cannot be brought from stolen goods, the same way Hashem is saying, I will make sure that they're only going to be successful with their dye manufacturer, with their glass manufacturer, only if they buy the substances from you honestly. So that's your advantage in Eretz Yisrael. So that's that then. So we understand what Zvolun's complaint was. But now, if we say that Kitron, which again, we established before, that Kitron is part of Zvolun's territory, if you're going to tell me that Kitron is identical with Tzipori, then why is Zvolun complaining about the part of Eretz Yisrael that he was given? Tzipori is a great place to have as part of his territory. What's the problem with it? You're going to say, well, it doesn't have, like this Eretz Yisrael has, places in it that are zavas cholav dvash, where literally honey drips and mixes with milk. The Gemara tells at the end of Ksuvas that one of the Chachamim, Rami Bar Yechezkel, I think it was, one time saw a place. He actually saw goats were eating figs off the fig trees, and milk is good. So honey is oozing out of the figs. Meanwhile, milk is oozing out of the animals' udders because they're so rich and fat and contented that milk is oozing out of their udders, and it's mixing on the ground over there. So he literally saw zavas cholav dvash, literally flowing with milk and honey. Anyway, so you're going to say that maybe Tzipori doesn't have that kind of advantage. Nope. I personally saw the Zovas Cholov Advash area around Tzipori. It was an area 16 by 16 mil, 256 square mil, which is a substantial amount of territory. A mil is about a kilometer, so 16 by 16 mil would be an area about 10 by 10 miles or so. So it's a pretty nice sized territory. You're going to say, okay, maybe Zvolun's problem is that they don't have as much of it proportionally as the other Shvatim. Fine, they have 16 by 16 mil of it, but maybe other Shvatim proportionally have more. On the contrary, I personally saw the area of Zavas Cholov Dvash throughout the entire Eretz Yisrael. It was an area in equivalent in size to in Bavel. There would be to put it in terms that people in Bavel will understand. It was the distance from Bay Kuvi until after the Tobanki, which is Vahavi Estrin Vatauti Parsi Ba'urka, it's a length of 22 parsa, or Vaputya Shita or Asar Parsi. The printed Gemaras have Shita Parsi, which is 6 parsa, and Yakabara Girsa Shita Asar, which then the math wouldn't work out. So Shita seems to be the easier to understand Girsa. Anyway, the whole Eretz Zavas Cholov Advash and the entire Eretz Yisrael, he's saying, all together, if you add up all the different places in Eretz Yisrael where you have this phenomenon, you have 22 by 6 parsa. Which comes out, now parsa is 4 mil. So it comes out, you have 132 square parsa. If you calculate the amount that Zvolun had in the area around Tzipori, and you calculate it relative to this amount, you come out that Zvolun has somewhere around 1/8 of all of the Zavas Cholov Advash of Eretz Yisrael. So it comes out, then he has a bit more than his fair share of it. So what's he complaining about? And the answer is afilahochi soda sakram haba difilahur lay. Still, even so, Zvolun is saying, fine, I have Zavas Cholov Advash, but I don't want that. I'd really rather have fields and vineyards. And therefore he was complaining, and Hashem tells him, you have other natural resources in your area instead. And the Gemara says, De Tanami. In fact, we can prove this from the wording. Dichtiv Naftali Amadroy me soda, because the pasuk continues, Naftali is on the heights of the field. So we see from that very clearly that Zvolun's complaint was that they don't have the heights of the field. They don't have the fields and vineyards that the other Shvatim have, and that's what they're complaining about. Now, why would that be Cheref Nafshe Lomus? Why would that be to the extent where they want to die? Ion Yaakov points out, Akina Vatayva Vakolim, Mitzina Sodom and Olam. So now that they have this Kina, they have this intense jealousy of Naphtali. And as Maharsha says, the reason is because now, for the first time during the war involving Dvorah and Barak, Sisera, they discovered what kind of territory Naphtali has. Now all of a sudden they have reason to complain, to the extent where the Kinah is driving them out of the world, until Hashem tells them, don't worry, you have other kinds of advantages in your territory that more than compensate for that. The Chalukah was Api Hashem, Api Gerdol, but nevertheless Shevet Zvolun still complained. They're not the only ones who complain. You find that Shevet Yosef also complained that our territory is not large enough, and Yeshua tells them your territory is plenty large if you go chop down the trees in the forest over there and build yourself new cities over there. So yeah, apparently there were Shvatim that complained about what they got. Since we're talking about identifying different cities in Eretz Yisrael, so now the Gemara gives another one. Amar Ababohu, the Pasuk says, in Tzfania, Ekroin Te'oker. Ekroin will be uprooted. It's a play on words. In other words, the Pasuk is calling it Ekroin because it will be uprooted. Now, on the face of it, Ekroin is one of the cities of the Plishtim. You have in various places in Tanakh and Sefer Shoftim and in other places, it mentions the five cities of the Plishtim, and one of them is Ekroin. But here, Rabbi Bohu is saying the Ekroin of this Pasuk is not necessarily the original Ekroin from the Plishtim, but rather a different one. Zu Kesri Bas Edron. This refers to Kesri, the place of the Romans. Kesri is the city of Caesarea on the coast of Eretz Yisrael. It's located among the sands. It's located on the coast in a sandy part of Eretz Yisrael. The Hihosa Yosid Tkuol Yisrael b'mei Yevonim. In the times when the Greeks ruled over Eretz Yisrael, it was a peg in the, it was a peg stuck among the Jews. It was an enclave of Goyim in Eretz Yisrael, and they caused a lot of trouble to the Jews. When the kings of the Hashmonaim became more powerful and they conquered it, and then they made it part of their territory in Eretz Yisrael. They called it the conquered tower of Tsur. The printed Gemaras have a Girsa Shir, which means the tower of song, and it's not real clear why it would be called that. The Girsa Tsur would be that they called it after the city of Tsur, because Tsur was also the famous commercial city of Tsur that's mentioned in many places in Tanakh. So this city was associated with it. They had like a commercial commercial links with it or whatever. There's also in the on the side of the Gemara and here in Yad Yosef, it brings a Girsa from the Aruch Achidas Migdal Shed, that they called it the conquered tower of Shed, because now that it's abandoned, now that they conquered it and kicked the goyim out of there, it became a desolate place that's haunted by shade. Anyway, the point is, so now eventually they conquered it and it became a Jewish city. So then, but up until that point, it had been inhabited by goyim, and it was a dangerous place. So therefore, the pasuk is saying that Ekron will be uprooted, which in fact happened. In fact, in Megillas Tainus, it mentions a Yom Tov that they celebrated in the time of the second Beis Hamikdash, in honor of that they in honor of the nest that they had conquered this place. Now, first of all, Tosfos points out that again, Ekron is one of the cities of the Plishtim. Why is the Gemara, in fact, the rest of that pasuk in Sfanya is in fact talking about other cities of the Plishtim? He mentions that Ashkelon will be abandoned, and Aza will be defeated, which should happen Meher of Yamenu. Anyway, so why over here is the Gemara taking Ekron out? So why is the Gemara calling it over here Ekron Kesri Bas Edom? Why is it calling it that it belongs to Edom? So Tosfos says because eventually the Romans conquered it, and therefore it became a city of Edom, because Edom we know is always associated with the Romans in the language of Chazal. Marsha explains further. You find like this. First of all, the fact that we're using the word te'oker on it, this is why we have in Shemoneh Esrei, we have the same expression. Well, Malchus Edom Shemehra Se'aker is based on this idea. Now the vote is, Marsha explains like this. In Yoshua, it mentions that there were five Sarni Plishtim, five main cities of the Plishtim. And it mentions them, but then it mentions a sixth one called Baha'avim, called the Avim. And the Gemara in Cholin explains that the Avim were people who had come and conquered part of the Plishti territory, and that made it allowed for Jews to conquer, because otherwise they had the treaty with Avimelech, they wouldn't have been able to conquer it. The point is then that and in fact, these Avim, the Gemara explains there in Cholin, are actually descendants of Esav. They're descendants of Tamon, the grandson of Esav. They wanted so much to be associated with the Plishtim and worship their Getchkas that they migrated from Tamon, from the lands of Edom, and moved to the lands of the Plishtim and took over the city. So therefore, the Gemara can actually call it Kesri Bas Edom, not just like Tosfos says, because Malchus Edom, because the Romans eventually took it over, but because even earlier than that, in the time of Tanakh already, before Tzfania's times even, already Edomim had come and settled over there. Therefore it's called Kesri Bas Edom. We'll continue more with that tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem. Yom Yom Mashiach Ge'ula. What is today? Tes Nissen. It's time that we have the time and we have the simonim of Ge'ula. So we have, at this point, we need only the one motion of Hashem. The Rebbe talks about that in our generation, in our times, we've already talked about many times, we've already finished all the inyonim that have to be accomplished. The only thing that's left is just the one tenua, the one movement of Hashem to take us out of Golos and bring us to Eretz HaKodesh. Therefore, we Jews plead and we cry out again and again and again, stronger and stronger, Ad Masai. Because that's all that's left is for Hashem to do his part. Continuing with halachas of Shabbos. Yesterday, by the way, we mentioned about the case where you have stitches that come loose in a garment where you're not allowed to pull the thread. You're not allowed to pull the thread tighter. Rabbi Elzevir pointed out you also have a halacha in that connection. If let's say you have a loose button on your clothing, so you can't go out with that loose button, because the problem is the button is not serving a function, and then it would be considered carrying. It's not bottled to the garment. So what you should do is then you do button the thing. If it falls off, it falls off. And if not, then the button is in fact serving a purpose, and therefore you can legitimately take it home on Shabbos. But if when you're buttoning it falls off, okay, it falls off, so be it. Then you've saved yourself a problem as well. Sometimes you have papers that got stuck together inadvertently. For example, sometimes you have pages of Sfarim that accidentally got stuck together. So you're allowed to open those up. Now, on the other hand, what you have is sometimes you have books where they didn't cut apart the edges of the pages. Sometimes you buy a book and you find like that, they forgot to cut apart the edges of the pages. That you're not allowed to do anything with on Shabbos. But here we're talking about where the pages were correctly cut apart and they just got stuck together because of the dye they use on the edges or whatever, then you're allowed to separate them on Shabbos. Another halacha. When you have, so he gives it, so you have different things in terms of opening packages of food or things like that. So he describes it in terms of what they did back then, where you would have a cloth tied around it, tied with a ribbon. You're allowed to rip that open on Shabbos because mekalkel, the equivalent nowadays would be, for example, ripping open bags and then boxes and things of that sort. You're allowed to on Shabbos. You do have the issue you can't tear letters because that's a different malacha. But in terms of the malacha of opening them up, there you don't have an issue because it's mekalkel. You do have an issue, by the way, when it involves making it a keli. So that becomes a lot more complicated. For example, you have certain kinds of, for example, you have cereal boxes. You open them, and now you have a functional keli. So that's a lot less simple. Similarly, you have questions as far as opening cans and bottles and things of that sort on Shabbos, where you're making them into a keli. As far as bottles, actually, they have a whole discussion depending on what the particular type of bottle cap is. You have some kinds of caps. You turn them, you twist them, and you have a ring left over there. And there's quite a bit of discussion about whether you're allowed to on Shabbos. Is that considered making a keli? Because now, on the face of it, the cap wasn't usable as something separate before. Now it is. Or do you say it's not a problem because it was a functional keli? To some extent, actually, there are posts we'll discuss. It may actually depend on the particular method that they use to manufacture the cap. In which case, you might have to go and start asking the manufacturers, or ask your rov to ask the manufacturers, as the case may be, how exactly it was made, and therefore which kind you can and can't open. So it does get a little complicated in terms of this whole business of opening up containers and ending up making a keli. Another halacha: you're not allowed to trap any animal on Shabbos. So that means even, for example, bugs or flies or things like that. If you have, for example, a bug that's actually on your skin and biting you, then you're allowed to pick it up and throw it off. However, the Alter Rebbe adds, if you can knock it off without actually touching it with your hand, then that's a better thing to do. Either way, you can't kill it because you can't kill any creature. Now, you have a din that he goes on to say that lice, since they're only mishavim min azeya, they're formed from sweat, then therefore you are actually allowed to kill them on Shabbos. There is quite a bit of discussion about that going back to the Pachad Yitzchak a few hundred years ago, because in later times, scientists found on the face of it, there are no such things as creatures that are spontaneously generated. They always come from eggs. So does that in fact change the halacha? The Pachad Yitzchak says, yeah, maybe, yeah. But different achronim talk about maybe not. There is a halacha. You are allowed to kill such creatures. The chachamim in their times put it in terms of the way people could understand, because you don't see the visible eggs that they come from. But the halacha is a halacha, whether it agrees with the scientific evidence or not. The Rebbe actually, I think, talks about it in a letter also, and says the fact is, just the scientists haven't found anything that spontaneously generates doesn't mean it's impossible for it to happen. So yeah, there's a good deal of discussion about all the ins and outs of that.